How many stalks are stand up? Can everyone hear me?
Okay, oh, sorry. Okay. My name is Mark Lepatin. I'm a trained mediator a couple of years ago with NFM. I don't practice and have no legal background, but I'm a professional communications consultant. And when I trained 2 years ago, I saw many of the transformative properties that Dominic eloquently described in his presentation to us. But the one thing I couldn't figure out at the time was why more people didn't take advantage of this cost-effective, readily available process to reach agreement. But being a journalist, it didn't take me too long to figure out why. I think we're looking at a huge marketing problem. I think mediation is fit for purpose because I don't think it's mediation's problem that we don't have data on collaborative law, solicitor negotiations. We already know they're much more expensive, which causes a second market failure in that most average salary private clients in this country can't afford the services of a decent high street family solicitor charging, I don't know, north of £180 an hour plus VAT. But something magic happens when you add up the price of some fixed fee legal advice and some drafting, and you add on the cost of mediation, and you get dispute resolution coming in at about £3,500, including VAT and court fees. So I did the only option left to me. I started a business. It's called Lawyer Supported Mediation. We're responsible for the MOJ data that you've heard tonight. There's our freedom of information requests. We now have 40 lawyers and mediation services, from the very smallest services to the largest law firms like Slater and Gordon, because it's our unified belief that until such time that we're able to implant the true messaging around mediation, when you read it on Mumsnet and you read it on Netmums, Saga, as we heard today, might get there. But that's the problem. The problem is the applicant always turns to help. Friends, solicitors, they go online, but they're not reading about two-thirds success rates, not reading about the cost of dispute resolution. Everything's put in standalone paragraphs, whereas, as I understand, the key remit of your organisation is to promote multidisciplinary dispute resolution. So what I'd like to ask is that why, where there's such huge value in combining a lawyer and a mediator, do I read so little? Why is it that I'm trying to stir this up as a rookie outsider when what I see is, well, painfully obvious, but feels quite alone at the moment?
Martin, I absolutely should have referenced the fact that those are your questions. Thanks for the info. I think there is a real problem here in relation to mediation and other forms of dispute resolution, pretty much anything that takes place outside of the courtroom. People don't know about it, and therefore, without that knowledge, they're not going to consider it, and even if it's presented to them as something that is a good thing, they're going to be quite wary of taking it up because it isn't sufficiently embedded for people to know other people who have had a really successful mediation process in the main. So it's a real difficulty. And as I said in my presentation, I don't think it is one that on its own the mediation profession or industry, however you want to term it, can actually address, because it costs an awful lot to raise public awareness and consideration of services. And I do think that government has a part to play in that, and I do hope that some of the unused resource that's currently sitting in the coffers for mediation, the purpose of legal aid mediation, can be diverted into some really creative thinking around raising awareness. In this day of social and digital media, it should be perfectly possible to do that with some professional input, some healthy support from the mediation profession itself. There should be opportunity to start that process of raising awareness and consideration of mediation as a proper forum for a lot of people who have family problems.
from my perspective, and there will be some here who have heard me say this ad nauseam, one of the major problems is the complete absence of what in the current jargon is called a comms strategy, a communication strategy. The most basic question, who should be selling the idea of mediation to the potential parties to mediation? Should it be government? Should it be judges in the court service? Should it be the mediation industry? There's no answer to that question. Nobody's even thought to pose the question. And ultimately it comes down to having a strategy which decides what the objective is, what the message is, who's going to sell the message, and critically, how the message is going to be sold. And I go to courts very frequently nowadays, visiting courts, and if you go to the front public area of the average county court, do you see anything selling the message about mediation? Well, the answer is you don't. It might be thought that that is one obvious place at which the message should be sold in a coherent fashion, in a way which has been agreed between everybody involved in selling the message, the government, the court service, the judges, the media. It is a massive problem, and I suspect a significant part of the problem, on top of the fact that, as we all know, it is the lawyers who traditionally have been the gateway to mediation, is the complete lack of information. And something needs to be done about that.
Adam, I run a small local family mediation service in Manchester. I have worked in mediation for a long time. I've also worked with CAFCAS for a long time. So I'd like to pick up on particularly Liz's point about triage and maybe integrated systems and multidisciplinary approaches. We have lawyers, we have mediators, we have judges, we have CAFCAS officers, we have social workers. But there isn't an integrated system in this country. I think the value of triage is great. I'm against people being squashed into a box. People need to have a good assessment of their initial needs and then be directed to the appropriate services. There is no funding for that in this country. That's the real crying shame. I think a lot of locally based mediation services and probably lawyers are doing that day to day in a very informal fashion. I have today talked to a CAB worker about exemptions to the MIAM process on domestic violence grounds, and put her client in touch with local lawyers who specialise in domestic violence. I've directed her father to contact centres. I've done some checks with the local authority about risk factors. These are all things that we are doing day to day that are part of the triage, but is completely unfunded, because I only get funded for face-to-face work with clients. I don't get funded for all this time spent on the phone, which is incredibly valuable, but is completely unfunded. And I think that's the huge crying shame in this country, of a lack of an integrated, multidisciplinary approach, sadly.
I was just wondering, who do you think would be best placed to do that? I mean, certainly in Australia, the family relationship centres were this sort of shop front. People realise that's where you go to. So there's been quite a cultural shift away from going to your family lawyer. Most people, or certainly a significant proportion of people, go now. They know that's where you go. But of course, the government haven't invested in $200 or $400 million here.
No, I think it's really difficult, and I don't support
the
current climate.
If you had,
I think it has to be early in the process. I have great respect for the work that CAFCAS do, but I think doing safeguarding checks pre-court and a very short report, they do not really refer people on to other services. They don't have the capacity to do so. I think it has to come much early in the process when people first split up. I would think there's a lot of scope for integration through Citizen Advice Bureau, mediation services and lawyers. Loads and loads of people are going to Citizen Advice Bureau for their initial advice, they're overrun as well. They're under-resourced, underfunded. But that's the place that people are going, lawyers, mediation services, and citizen advice. I think the cash rule is too late, really.
Go for a local partnership.
Well, lovely, but who will keep these things going and make them happen? Yeah.
In Family Matters, I'm actually doing something very similar. So we meet with children's centres, we get their parents where there's early separation, we meet with social workers, we have family conferences. So it is working, and also for disadvantaged people who don't have access to mediation, don't understand the process, and we're able to kind of get hold of them when they kind of first in the legal firm. So I can see that it's a really positive process. Yeah.
Can I say something on that? I think we all know, and again, it's such a pity we weren't able to convince government that front-loaded processes actually work really well for people. You can prevent some terrible problems down the line if you give them a little bit of advice and support right at the outset. But there is a real challenge and a problem with this. It's not just about delivering that advice and support, it is about the coordination of that, which I think it's working really well with a lot of committed people on a local basis, but to try and build that nationally actually does need resource to provide that coordination. You've got to have individuals or organisations to hold the ring so that different agencies can work productively together. And again, we come back to the issue of the lack of resource to do that.
Samuel Stein, I trained as a barrister and a mediator, but I actually work as a child psychiatrist. And what we're finding is that the group of people that don't fit mediation and are blocked from the courts are landing up in child mental health services. And what they're really saying is they don't want a calm, tranquil, peaceful, neutral place to work. They want a place to have rage, threat, anger, hurt. And the problem is that if they don't get that through the courts, which is what they used to get, you could throw water over your partner's lawyer. And so they're coming into an inappropriate service. And I think it's a great pity, and this is for me where mediation isn't fit for purpose, is it is chock full of psychotherapists, family therapists, and other social workers who should be doing more of the emotional mediation before you start filling out form E's. Because until the families can get past that, they're not going to do the suitable mediation that we see being successful. So hopefully there's a scope to expand that, to have a more emotive, conflictual place for people to have the argument before they settle the money and children.
My name's Corinna Schiffer. I was a barrister and I'm a mediator. I just move on from your point. What happens very often, people are too conflicted to go on to mediation. It's deemed to be unsuitable. So what those people need is couple counselling, what do you want to call it, or some kind of communication, not therapy, but help with their communication. And as mediators, we've always steered away from that, saying we're not really able to deal with that. So what we want to do is to refer them on to a couple counsellor who has got some sort of therapeutic background. And then you get the difficulty that maybe the wife, I'm going to be stereotypical about this, maybe the wife said, okay, yes, I do need some help to talk to him. And he's going, I in no way am I going to a therapist. So you then get that problem. You get the problem that there's that stigma, and then you get the problem of extra costs as well. So no idea how to solve it.
It's a huge part of the whole process, and I think we're bending over backwards to take the conflict out of the process. But what a lot of the couples want is a bit of conflict. It just needs to be controlled and managed. But taking the conflict out is probably what's diminishing the mediation uptake. They need a good fight, they just need a good referee to help them.
That's what the judges are for.
It's what Nick Wilson for more abilities in areas has recognised for years, and talked about for years, was the therapeutic value of the core process. And there are cases, and I've seen it, we all see it, where the process in court does produce the therapeutic closure. In a sense, irrespective of what the judge says or does at the end of the day, the process which helps work this conflict out. And the fact is, I suspect there are many people who do need the day in court or the 2 days in court as part of that therapeutic journey. And it may be a rash and dangerous thing to say in this meeting tonight when the topic is mediation, but I do wonder whether there aren't, we shouldn't be readier to recognize that, as in so many things with the family law, there is not one size fits all, there is not a single solution. There is a wide range of solutions, different forms of ADR, mediation, collaborative law, arbitration, you name it, it's there. And perhaps, and this fits in with the triaging, we need to be more subtle at the outset in trying to determine which particular kind of procedure, or the combination of procedures, may be best for a particular couple. And I was at a local family justice board conference recently where there was a session devoted to different forms of ADR, and six different people each practicing a different form of ADR were on the platform, and each in a sense selling their particular product. But one of the products was a sort of multidisciplinary package. There was a consortium, and if you entered the consortium, they would give you the therapeutic input to get rid of the anger before moving you on to the mediation part of the same consortium. So there was, as it were, an overall package which could be adapted and tailored to the needs of the particular couple. And it sounded a very interesting idea. And interestingly, the total cost was not anything like me, not quite matching. Now, this is out of the problems, of course, the costs are always lower. But, I think your point is absolutely right. And we need to feed that into the process and somehow build a process which recognizes some couples will need that. But that's not an alternative to mediation. It's something that which we need to build in so that we can have both parts of the process.
Philip Waller. Family court judge, formerly in London, now in the prison north of Watford. And I'm an avowed supporter and encourager of mediation. I should say that at the outset. We've tried to move, with the help of mediators, heaven and earth, to secure mediation services at courts in London of the sort that happens in, certainly has happened in Milton Keynes, without any lasting results. But I'd like, if I may, to echo what the President has said and just suggest that one of the problems is timing and that we're in great danger of compartmentalising the process so that if someone is, or a couple are not seemingly ready for mediation at the outset, they're then in the court process recording that and trying to get out of that. And what we need to be able to do is to identify at each stage of the breakdown process, right from the start, what service is required for that particular couple, much as the President was saying in the triage process. The problem we've got at the moment is that the timing is completely wrong because there's little information available, despite what the government had said should happen a year ago about the information hub and so on. Little information at the point of breakdown when the couple most need it. There's a lot of information on the web about how to get to court. So if you think about going to court, and then they are told, well, you've got to go to the Mayan first. But of course, that's exactly the wrong stage to be told about Mayan, because the applicant then has set their mind on going to court. And so they're not really interested in that. And what we find, one of the reasons why the practice direction, which I confess I drafted, Tim Hat time, hasn't worked, is that people try to get out of it. And they find ways of finding a reason why they shouldn't go to a Mayan. And that's completely the wrong its way around, and that's part of the problem of the discussion that we've been having in the Reform Committee lately. And so we should let people get a thought and do it as the President has said. We should let them have their shouting match. I've had many shouting matches on a conciliation appointment, which have been fantastically effective because it's the first time the couple have spoken to each other. They've got it out of their system, and you let them do that, and then you say, well, now what? And then we can move on from there. And what we need to be able to do is have much more integration of all of the services available so that at that point you can say in court, now what you need to do, go and talk to a mediator. And we've tried to have mediators at court so that they could talk to a mediator and be then referred out. If you say, go and talk to a mediator, and they just wander out of the building, it doesn't happen. So we need far more integration of the services so that we can bring people to the right point at the right time. People are, even not at that stage, fed up with the court process. The Court of Appeal Mediation Service is has considerable success, but it's necessarily on a small scale because people have got that far and they realise that they need to do something else. And so we need somehow to be able to develop the services in an integrative way. And I'd be interested to know what panel feel about that issue of timing.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense, really. At the moment, this involves an evaluation of PIP Plus, which is, we thought was a great project that involved litigating parties, so referral from court, so sent to parent education, PIP, and then they had a meeting with the mediation provider where the two former couple were brought together and had a bridging meeting when they were helped to communicate, and then they were supposedly ready to attend a MIAP. You know, what a brilliant idea, except it completely runs against the grain of what the parties wanted to do. They didn't want to jump towards these groups, so I think what you're suggesting makes sense, and you certainly have that route available, very clear, very well flagged, as you know, a colleague was saying at the back, about very good communications about this is the way for mediation, if you want to go in this direction immediately. That's there, that's established. But for others, you know, you can't force them down that route, you know, come to court, have a fight, and then think about what's next. So sort of having those different pathways available rather than we keep designing these even more, ever more complicated processes for people to go through, and they just don't want to do it. And I think we need to sort of hear that eventually and take it on board.
Can I fully support what Philip's saying and indeed what Lucy's just said? And the last two or three contributions, I have two words running around in my head, and that's about autonomy and respect. That what we can't be doing as a system is trying to push people. We've heard about the potentially very dangerous consequences of that into boxes, down pathways that they are not willing to do at that point in time or not enabled to do at that point in time. So it is really about having a multiplicity of options which are available to the individual and the couple that they can keep the doors open so that at any point in time during their journey they are able to access different mechanisms. And that must be the right way to approach it rather than perhaps a slightly overly paternalistic approach that says, well, you here, you are going to do this now. Ultimately, that is what the court needs to do, but options should be available at every trigger point in the journey for people to choose otherwise.
After this point, it might be appropriate to ask those who are propounding the motion what to express their views on the suggestion that there should be a multiplicity of options made available to the potential consumers of mediation.
I very much agree with Philip's suggestion. The problem is that having mediators in court, who's paying them? They only get paid if they do a piece of work. And I personally don't think court is a great venue for mediators. I do think having a court presence, a mediator in court, is very helpful, so that the clients can meet a mediator. And having a judicial steer towards mediation is terribly important. I just want to pick up on this idea of having a fight and then it's all fine. I don't quite buy it. I mean, it's a nice story, but and I think there's a place for ventilation. I also don't take, sorry, that the barrister who is now mediator's implicit comment that, you know, unless your clients are perfectly behaved, you can't mediate. We manage conflict. We manage difficult behaviour. That's what I do for a living. But generally speaking, when people come all sort of buoyed up, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't occasions when that would be helpful for them to ventilate and then you can get on to something more meaningful. But generally speaking, what they're doing is they're saying, look, I'll tell you who the sensible person is. It's me. It's that idiot over there. That's what they're doing. They're really trying to show you that they're the sensible one. And they're probably doing that in court as well. I don't think the human condition is as simple as, you know, you do a little bit of counselling or therapy and you deal with your communication issues and then you move on. It's just not as simple or as linear as that.
I wanted to make exactly those points, Dominic. Welcome, as many mediators in this room will suggest, welcome to my day job, which is not about squashing conflict, but is about actually helping people to go through that transition through the loss cycle, which includes understandable anger, and then actually creating something from that. But I also wanted to most particularly say, I'm very conscious that we're talking a lot about, my apologies, Beverly Sayers, I'm merely a mediator. I just wanted to say something which was about the publicity and the need for a comms strategy. There are a number of mediators that have had quite an extensive secret shopper tactic to courts and to actually the government helpline. The government helpline very helpfully demonstrated to the secret shopper, or told the secret shopper, that there was no legal aid available for mediation. And when pushed and consulted with other members of the helpline, came back and confirmed that there was no legal aid for mediation. And I'm pleased that so many of you are shaking your heads. Sadly, sir, the court staff equally said, yes, things, similar things, and I have a list of these. There are these things called FM1s, but there are a whole pile of exceptions. Just look at the exception that you can tick, and that will be sufficient. If they actually mentioned the FM1, most of them were not declaring that there was any need for anything other than a court application. So whilst I absolutely feel that the common strategy that the MOJ currently has is the delightful little word video and the associated leaflets, I do think there is a real need to put the NOJ house in order and to ensure that the court staff are fully informed. This is not about practice directions. I can tell you the courts that this applies to, and we really do need to have an internal strategy where people are actually informed within courts. And I'm not talking about judiciary, I'm talking about the people who meet the public. This is not a common strategy, although it is.
Ernest Ryder, systems anorak. about 2.5 to 3 years ago, those of us who were consulting with David Norgrove with you pointed out to him, he understood and accepted the point, and to government, that you would not get off the ground with a service of the type that he wanted and you all wanted. Because there hasn't actually been a dissenting voice tonight from either side of the debate. We all seem actually to be coming towards some mode of agreement, which I'll come to in a second. We pointed out that you needed an integrated approach. Call it a communication strategy if you want. He called it a dispute resolution service. he then went, it was a privatised one, it's not a public sector service when you're told what to do. You all do what you do best in the way you do it best. And the service makes that available to people through triage. He then went to Australia and discovered the cost of what they provided. And that was the end of that argument. It just died a death. For my part, I'd like to come back and just take what Philip and each of you have recently brought together. What the court doesn't have, and it can't have through court counter staff, because they have no role in this, what it doesn't have is the triage service you want. You want the referral. You might want a judge in certain circumstances to be that referral. What you probably would prefer is a non-judicial, non-court figure to be the person that says, look in this area. There are 10 different forms of dispute resolution. But we need to talk them through. Which one are you going to access? Including for those who want to access the court and or should access the court first as an exemption from a mayam and so on of the court. They've already had this trial in civil. It's not rocket science. It worked when they had it in civil justice. They abandoned it for reasons that I can't even begin to work out. But there was an employee who was not a civil servant and who was not a judge who provided the integrated service for all the mediators, all the arbitrators, all collaborative law and everybody else through the court. And everybody went through that door. Even if you were an emergency application, you might go to your judge first in the emergency application, but you still went back to that door to access what might be cost management in a financial circumstance. I'm just pointing out to you what this is going to cost. Welfare management in the children's sector. It strikes me we're getting quite close to an agreement amongst both sides of the debate as to a referral mechanism that might work.
Thank you. I've been waiting quite a while to make my point. Kirsten O'Dea from National Family Mediation. I'd just like to pick up on a few things that people have said about triaging and giving people options earlier in the process. I think that's what the DWP are trying to do through the Innovation Fund, and I know that that money has been available for different interventions in order to do this. However, my worry is that, for instance, the DWP only sits on one part of the family agenda, and that's child maintenance. And it seems that joined-up government thinking is not happening, even though I do know that departments meet regularly. It seems a sort of bitsy, piecemeal approach, what different government departments are doing. There's been the money that's been put into the web app, sorting out separation. I know there are particular issues with that. But these things only target separated parents. What about others that aren't parents that are going through the relationship breakdown? Beverly mentioned that the Ministry of Justice must get its house in order, but I think that it applies to all government departments dealing with various elements of the family agenda. And they need to understand the integral parts that make up family breakdown, as well as the ins and outs of family mediation, in order to increase the capacity to make mediation more fit for purpose.
I only comment that part of the thinking that lay behind my earlier comments about the absence of a common strategy is very much a reflection of the fact that we have DWP, which one would not intuitively think of as being a department that has anything to do with family law, but in many ways is actually an innovative department. One's got DFE, one's got MOJ, one's got DOH. And they themselves can't come up with a coherent government strategy on this. That is why we don't have effective sources of information for people. And that is why we have so many problems on the ground that we have. The complete lack of joined up thinking about this. And that's before you ever get the government joining up with the private sector, with the court system, with the private lawyers, into the kind of integrated system which I think, I suspect we would all think is the correct solution.
Ruth Kirby, barrister and attempted mediator at times. Firstly, an expression of appreciation for the huge skills that mediators have and that they use day in, day out. I have only done a few mediations and I was emotionally completely ruined after them. But I have to say that I respectfully disagree slightly with the President's analysis of the day in court and the therapeutic value of that. Not disagree with it, but perhaps would say that mediation is a much more satisfactory day out for both parties at the same time, in my experience. I know that Dominic Rayside and Flip do co-mediation with dual, sometimes a barrister, sometimes a lawyer with a therapeutic person. And I think that that is a fantastic way forward for anybody who can afford it. But as far as acting as the sponge is concerned, as a barrister, you do it only for one side and you only take half the force of the need to absorb. As a mediator, you have to take the two sides of the fury that was referred to earlier. It is so much better and so much more effective than litigation, and so much more satisfying. The day out, as I say, I think is much better because they hear each other and it's much more constructive. I think as far as lawyers are concerned, our main value in terms of offering mediation as an option is to keep it in mind at all times. And Sir Matthew will say that in the Court of Appeal and in the High Court, in international family law, we use it all the time. Even in the course of litigation, we keep mediation there as an option and send people to the Unite or anybody else who can offer those services. And it is something that I know that Mr. Rayside doesn't know, that in one of my private law cases, he mediated a particular issue within the private law. So as long as we as lawyers keep it on the table at all times, that is one route in, I believe, for mediation still within the family justice system.
Robin Upcullen, I represent the Law Society at the Family Mediation Council, and I'm also involved with three mediation services in the West Midlands. I think there is one potential source of assistance that maybe no one yet has thought of from government, and that is an element of the Cabinet Office, which is part of the glue that holds government together, and that is the Nudge Unit. The Nudge Unit exists to change people's behaviour, using behavioural science to do that. And what we are all talking about here today is the need to change public behaviour, to let them think about mediation first as an option, or if not mediation, then certainly somewhere to come to find out about dispute resolution options. It costs the government, it will cost the government, a very great deal of money the more cases turn up at court and use expensive judicial time when, being blunt, cheaper mediation time is available. So ask the Nudge Unit. We want you to help reduce the costs to government of judiciary in adjudicating these cases. We want you to reduce the cost to government and local government of health support services, local government support services for the children and families who have to go through relationship breakdown and access support and assistance. That Nudge Unit is there to reduce the total government spend by changing public behaviour. Is that not what we need?
Now, we've probably got time for one more question, if somebody feels moved. Yes, I see a hand up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My case on that is lot abroad, thank you. And certainly don't tell my civil mediating chums, but FMC are streets ahead of the CNC in organization and research, etc. The important message I am beginning to convey to Sarah is that we have to have closer and greater collaboration than we have had in the past. I commit myself to that process because the more the mediation world speaks with one voice, the better that voice will be heard.
Somebody else's hand went up.
Heather Payne, I'm the paediatrician member of the Family Justice Council. I just have two, that's a very difficult one to follow, but maybe just to make two practical suggestions, one of which is if anybody knows any of the script writers of Coronation Street, maybe getting them to write in a theme of mediation with their continuous family problems that they have. And secondly, again, as an interested party who isn't directly involved, from where I'm looking, oranges and apples are actually both fruit, and they're jolly sight healthier than the Big Mac and chips alternative of much more expensive stuff. So I just wonder whether we shouldn't take the opportunity with the Family Justice Council and again, try and pull things together in that big fruit bowl of leadership. So that's just my...
fruit bowl of leadership had better bring the proceedings to an end now. I think we've had a very interesting as well as a very enjoyable evening. I'm immensely grateful to everybody who's come, not just, if I may say so, to those who propounded and bravely opposed the motion, but to all our contributors from the floor. In accordance with our normal practice, this has all been recorded. There will be a transcript which will be published on the website as an early opportunity. And I would very much hope, and I think there are somewhere in the audience some brave souls who come from some of the departments who've been so busy producing. Perhaps they will carry the message back to their political masters and ministers. It might be a good idea if both officials and ministers in some of the departments we've been talking about took the trouble to read the transcript and took the opportunity to ponder the views which have been expressed by so many professionals. I'm not, of course, in the business of tampering with transcripts, but it does occur to me to wonder whether it might not be appropriate for the transcript on those occasions where there was significant applause to make a note to that effect, because there were a number of occasions and points were made where there was very significant applause, and the points being points which perhaps need to be considered by our political lords and masters. But thank you all very much indeed for coming. It's been, I hope, an enjoyable and informative evening. I've certainly found it so. There's a feedback form, is there? The moment of truth. If you could fill up your feedback forms, we would be very grateful. But that's it. Thank you all very much indeed. Good night.